hearing in a subcommittee format at the moment. Going to open with a public hearing on House Bill 3290. Have three people signed up. I'd like them all to come forward. Wes Channel, Pat O'Connor, and what is that? Is that Jerry?
Jerry Hallberg.
Jerry Hallberg.
Coming in the door, sir.
Coming in the door. All right.
I hope. Been home. I thought they were last. And I can start.
Doesn't look like you had much problem in the House with this bill.
Not too much, sir.
Whatever consent that I haven't used. I don't know what consent agenda is. You just, chairman says, we're going to do all this and no objection. Carry on. That's Jan.
Move forward, please. Begin your testimony.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Wes Channel, and I have the pleasure to serve as president of Klamath Community College. This particular bill is about community college service districts. I have with me today Presidents O'Connor, Pat O'Connor, and Jerry Hallberg, respectively from Oregon Coast and Tillamook Bay Community Colleges. The bill is a technical amendment to the existing statutes, cleaning up some language that has been in Oregon statute over a number of years. You're left, we are left, with some statutes that reflect two different types of community college districts, said districts having absolutely the same powers and authorities, so it's just a district name. However, there is provision in the statute that to change the name, you have to have a public election, which is about $35,000 in our case, and it's $35,000 we can ill afford to invest simply to have a vote to change the name with no change in power. So we ask that this be submitted. Our representative, Representative Girard, in Klamath Falls brought this forward. The Commissioner of Community Colleges gave us the language, and we sent it to the House, and as you can see, it went through the House, and it is now in the Senate. I would ask that you do whatever is necessary at this level to expedite it through the process. I believe it does have an emergency clause on it. That's important to Klamath Community College because we are in the accreditation process right now, and in fact, we'll have an accreditation visit in 2 weeks. To most students, to most people on the street, accreditation doesn't mean much. But the reality is, once students find out that their financial aid is contingent on our accreditation, they become very, very interested very quickly in our accreditation. So there is some sense on our part, at least in Klamath Falls, that we put this through the process. And I am here to answer your questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Are there questions of the witness? Seems a very straightforward issue. Anything to add to the testimony?
Sure. Just, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Pat O'Connor, President of Oregon Coast Community College. Just the same thing that Dr. Channel brought up. The cost, the election cost, Oregon Coast Community College is around $15,000, and we could use that, spend that on direct instruction. Again, housekeeping matter that we would find would help eliminate a lot of confusion about the difference between a service district and a community college district. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you.
And for the record, Jerry Hallberg, president of Tillamook Bay Community College, and our college has been in existence for 20 years. And previously, there were restrictions that service districts could not be allowed to do, and they have been eliminated through the legislative process over the past 13, 14 years. One was that we could not hire our own faculty. That was done away with through the legislative process in 87. In 89, the restriction that we could not own property was eliminated through the legislative process through the committees unanimously, and also in 97 we have bonding authority for community colleges, and that was unanimous through both the House committees and the full House and the Senate committees and the full Senate. So I'm here to support the bill and answer any questions that you may have.
Any opposition?
Not to our knowledge, sir.
Thank you very much. Close the public hearing, open a work session on Senate Bill 3290. Chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Castillo.
I move that we adopt House Bill 3290 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Castillo has moved House Bill 3290 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Committee.
Ferrier.
Ferrier. You know, Senator Farioli really likes community colleges, and now he's been working on them.
I'd be happy to carry the bill.
Senator Gordley will carry the bill. Thank you, Senator Gordley. We're going to move in reverse order up the... Let's see, wait a minute. I'm waiting on a representative. Maybe I won't open it. Representative Tootie Smith, not here. On the public hearing on House Bill 2198, and we have one witness, please. Mary Kay, tell us about House Bill 2176. No, I got the wrong number again.
Yeah.
2198.
Yes, thank you very much. For the record, my name is Mary Kay Tetreau, and I'm the provost at Portland State University. Chairman Starr, members of the committee, I am pleased to be here today to speak in support of HB 2198. This is a rare opportunity for me as a higher education representative. I think it's the first time I've appeared before a legislative committee when I haven't been asking for money. The legislation does not appropriate any funding to PSU, nor does it require state system of higher education to offer any programs. HB 2198 simply recognizes several very crucial PSU programs that are central to the mission of Oregon's Urban University. The programs identified in this bill are also unique within the state system of higher education. If approved, HB 2198 will give statutory recognition to the Mark O. Hatfield School of Government, named in honor of one of Oregon's most highly respected public officials. Servants. Dr. Ron Tamman, the school's first director, is here today in the audience. The bill also gives statutory authority to the Center for Lakes and Reservoirs, the Graduate School of Social Work, which offers the only Council on Social Work Education accredited Master in Social Work degree in Oregon, and the Institute of Portland Metropolitan Studies. PSU and the State Board of Higher Education request this legislation because we believe it will help us gain private and federal support for our programs. PSU will soon embark on the public phase of our first ever capital campaign, and our goal is to obtain private funding for scholarships, endowed faculty positions, and facilities. Last session, the legislature not only adopted a new higher education budget model, as you well know, but you also made a significant financial investment in the Oregon University system. I am grateful for that support because one half of the 4,000 new students in the Oregon University system have enrolled at Portland State University. One half of the new students. Our sponsored research funding has increased, and we have targeted funding toward high demand programs that relate directly to the needs of the region, such as engineering and teacher education. Passage of this legislation will help PSU continue our drive to be the nation's model urban university. Thank you for allowing me to testify today, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Questions of the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon. How would PSU, Portland State University, use the statutory recognition in its capital campaign?
Mm-hmm. The statutory recognition, Senator Starr and Senator Gordley, the statutory recognition would give us a certain panache, if you will, to go to private donors to request funding, and of course it would also be very helpful at the federal legislative level, at the federal level, so that it would give a certain kind of designation that the president and deans and others, the director of the Hatfield School, could take to potential donors.
I am missing something, Mr. Chair. I guess a little bit more information about how the information would be packaged and presented. I'm still not clear on how the statutory recognition enhances.
I could imagine several ways in which it would enhance the recognition. It could be something printed in brochures and documents. It could very importantly be something which the president, in working with potential donors, could refer to. It's something that we could let our students know about. So I think it would enhance our chances of external funding because of the designation.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Appreciate you bringing this before us.
You're welcome.
I'm going to close the hearing and open the work session on...
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 2198 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hartung has moved House Bill 2198 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any opposition? Hearing none. So ordered.
I'd like to carry it.
Senator Hartung will carry. Going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2682 and call Representative Tootie Smith.
Thank you, Senator.
Beth Ann Darby wanted to testify also on the bill. Please.
Go ahead. I'm Representative Tootie Smith, House District 28. I'm from Owala. I carried this bill on the floor of the House. We were very successful. It was brought to us by the Oregon School Employees Association, of which I used to be a member. And I think I know a little bit about this subject. Before I became a state representative, I was a librarian in the school district, K through 5 elementary school. And during my classified employment, I saw and was asked at various times to administer drugs to our children. And it's a very touchy situation. It's an unfair situation and extra burden I feel our classified employees have been bared to brunt because there's nobody else in the school district to do it. We no longer have nurses, something I'd like to see. Our teachers are busy teaching the students, and the students usually need to come out of the classroom into an area, for instance, an office or a back room behind an office was our case, and have the drugs be given to them. We're also in a unique situation in our schools where children are taking more drugs than ever before for various reasons. I'm not saying whether that's good or bad, I'm saying it exists. And I think our classified employees who work very hard and serve nobly need to have a little bit of protection regarding the dispensing of these medications in the form of an extra liability. That's it in a nutshell. That's based on my own experience. I feel very strongly and passionate about this bill. I hope you pass it and move it, and I can answer any questions you might have.
Questions? Thank you. Appreciate very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, which, as you know, is a public employee union of classified school professionals working in Oregon's K-12, ESD, Community College, Head Start, Park and Recreation Districts, and Library Districts in the state. And I am here asking your support for House Bill 2682. In the 1997 session, the Oregon Legislature passed a bill, which was House Bill 2535, which the main intent of that bill was to require that when school employees dispense medication to students, that the employee must first be trained in the dispensing of medication. And that includes everything from how, which forms must be filled out by parents, how those should be filled out, what should come to school with the child, how it should be stored, and how it should be administered, what the side effects may be for drugs, various drugs, and all sorts of other information. As Representative Smith told you, and I'm sure you're aware, in the good old days, school nurses used to do this. Today, classified school employees do this. House Bill 2535 was the first requirement in the law that they be, that recognized that lay people are now dispensing medication in schools as they are not allowed to do anywhere else, and insisted that those employees be trained before they dispense medication. Unfortunately, the bill also did one other thing, and that is, in an effort to assure that training occurs in the schools, the immunity from liability that school employees enjoyed when they are acting in good faith and at the direction of their supervisor in dispensing medication went away, except for those employees who are trained. The difficulty with that language is that we're talking about secretaries in schools who are doing the dispensing. They have no authority or ability to determine whether or not they are trained. That's an administration function and prerogative. Also, this is a new requirement, and many of these secretaries have been dispensing medications for many years. They may not know that their liability shifted in 1997. Well, the bill took effect in the summer of 1998. And suddenly, the thing that they have been doing at the request of their principal for years, they suddenly could become personally liable for anything that may happen. And so we came to the legislature this session to ask that the immunity provision that existed prior to the bill be restored, so that when, in recognition of the fact that classified employees do not have any power or authority over determining whether or not and when they are trained on anything, but still must do what their principals and other administrators tell them to do. And so House Bill 2682 comes to you, and it does one simple thing. It does not change the training requirement that exists in the statute. It only grants immunity to employees who are acting, again, at the direction of their supervisor and in good faith. That puts the responsibility on administrators to assure that training occurs, which is the real intent of the law, not with someone who has no power over that training. It's a very simple bill. The bill passed with 55 aye votes in the House. I am unaware of any opposition to the bill, and I urge you to please support it and pass it on to the floor of the Senate today. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Other questions? If not, I thank you very much.
And thank you for allowing me to testify.
Yes, Beth Ann.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, I'm Beth Ann Darby with the Oregon Education Association. In a second here, you're going to have my testimony, and I won't bother to read that to you except for to urge you to support this bill. We believe that it's good for all of our school personnel, teachers, and classified employees alike. While the proper answer is more funding to put more medical personnel and school nurses specifically into our schools, our budget just doesn't seem to allow that at this time. This is a good bill that should be allowed to make sure that the people that are taking care of these medically fragile children have some protection in their efforts to do that. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. We're going to close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 2682.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Decker.
I move House Bill 2682 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Decker moves House Bill 2682 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Decker, would you share the bill?
Be glad to.
going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2190. No, that's the wrong one. 2176.
We did that.
We did that one already. I want to get there. This is Colonel Mike Caldwell. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department, and I'm here today asking that you favorably consider House Bill 2176. This was requested by the Governor at the Military Department's request. And to give you just a little bit of background, the Oregon National Guard did request and receive the Tuition Assistance Program in 1997, and it was only appropriated $120,000 of general funds for this program. The intent is to provide 90% tuition assistance to up to 90% tuition assistance to National Guard members attending Oregon community colleges and institutions of higher education. The recipient must be seeking a first baccalaureate degree, maintain satisfactory performance within the Oregon National Guard, and agree to serve the National Guard for a period of up to 4 years upon completion of the courses for which the tuition assistance was granted. We developed a partnership between ourselves and the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to administer the program. The tuition assistance program budget was increased in the 99 session to $1.2 million, and in this session it's moved up to $1.3 million. We've had over 500 recipients or enlistments due to this program. The increase in funds, with the increase in funds, we did increase our recruits, which was the objective. And the process of distributing these funds to colleges and universities through the Scholarship Commission was challenging initially, but we've worked that out. But what we have is a situation now where we need a little bit more flexibility to administer this program. And in the current statute, we have Oregon Revised Statute 399.280 and 399.290. And these stipulate how we're supposed to do the eligibility certification and also distribute the money. Yep. We found these to be unworkable, actually, through the Student Assistance Commission, and so they technically aren't of any value to us any longer. Also, we found that through no fault of a lot of these recruits, we were unable to get them the qualification required so they would be eligible for this money. And typically what happens is a recruit joins the National Guard, and then there's a delay between the time that they join and when they go through their basic training and their advanced individual training. The law requires them to have that advanced individual training, that skill qualification, before we could distribute the money. Through no fault of their own, some of these young men and women were joining the National Guard. We were waiting for the active component, the active Army, to provide a school seat. Some of them waited over a year to get that seat, where they could have been in school, they could have been drawing these funds, and they've been attending drill, they've been doing everything we've asked them to do, but we simply couldn't get them off to the school. We think that's unfair, and we think that we ought to have the ability to pick and choose when that happens in a particular instance and allow them to go ahead and go into school with this funding. If they don't follow through with their agreement, we have a mechanism to collect the money back. So we really have no loss of funds totally, but we actually contribute to their education quicker, get them started on their careers, and they don't get delayed and don't think that they got sold a bill of goods. So the tuition assistance program has been a wonderful program for us. It's increased our recruiting immensely. Our only problem is we don't have enough money to offer it to everybody, and if we did, that would be wonderful. Like some states offer 100%, some states don't. We're looking currently in this next biennium of lowering the 90% to go to 50% or a flat fee to try to spread it out even further. And that's probably what we're going to do with the additional money that was received in this year's budget. So with that, I'll conclude and be available for any questions of yourself or your committee, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there questions of Colonel?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Colonel. It might be in here. I'm looking. Just how many students participate in the program, and maybe like a breakdown of who they are, where they're from, if you have that quickly at your, if not.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Decker, I do not have those exact numbers. I could get them for you. I can tell you roughly. We recruited over 500 soldiers and airmen into the program. Of the 500, it was about a 60-40 split of community college versus university.
Mm-hmm.
And these came from all over the state, in every county, in every university, in every community college. We actually oversold the program based on other states' data. And what we found after now almost a year, a full year into the actual recruiting and people drawing money, that about 35 to 40% of the recruits are actually showing up in school. So their intention versus what they show up to, we believe that about 10% of that is caused because we know that about 10% of them have not been able to become technically eligible to receive the money.
Hmm.
And as a matter of fact, we've lost some of those. They have come in and asked for redress. Several of them have been afforded that redress and gotten out of the guard because they don't believe that we were completely upfront with them with respect to this little problem. We were, but then again, like they told us years ago, a recruiter only lies when his lips move, so
mm-hmm.
you never know what they were told at that particular point. So we've been very accommodating to those young men and women who feel that they weren't treated according to what they were sold. We would like not to have to do that and have that other 10% go on to school. That's what the money was for. That's what we got it for. So we're recruiting and getting these young men and women a good education. So that's roughly. I can get you the exacts if you want.
And Mr. Chair, do you know roughly just the gender and racial and ethnic breakdown of who these folks are? It doesn't have to be even close to exact.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Deckard, it follows pretty much our normal recruiting guidelines, which is pretty much mirrors the racial background here in the state, our racial demographics. We don't do a very good job of meeting 50% females, primarily because we don't have opportunities for every skill class. We're limited on what we can offer female applicants, and that does create a large male population in the military service, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We've done better at that over the years. We've had a continual rise over the last decade, and if I had my budget document here, I could tear those pages out and hand them to you. We've not only met all the state guidelines, but we've actually exceeded most of them. So we're very pleased with what we're doing there, and I think we've worked real hard, particularly in the officer side of the house, to encourage more females to get into the officer corps and make sure that they get promoted on time and make sure that they have the right career path. So we feel really strongly that we've done a good job there. But I'd be more than happy to get that information and share it with you.
That'd be interesting, yeah.
Okay, I'll do that. Any further questions?
Thank you, Colonel.
Mr. Chairman.
Close public hearing and work session, House Bill 2176. Chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
I move House Bill 2176 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Gordley has moved House Bill 2176 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? If not, any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you.
Chair will carry.
Sure, yeah, yeah. No hurry.
We have another bill before us, and I didn't ask that we round up Mr. Crummell. While we're doing that, let's have a work session on Senate Bill 694. Yeah. Open the work session on Senate Bill 694. And I see that I've lost.
We'll have four votes.
Oh, I still have four votes. Jen, tell us where we come with Senate Bill 694. We had a bit of information forwarded to us. I think the committee needs to hear.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we heard Senate Bill 694 back on March 22nd. Joanne Flint from the Department of Ed came in and testified, and what this bill does would require the State Board of Education to add instructional materials to the list of textbooks adopted by the board for its use in school districts. The bill is at the request of the chair, and the department only concern is the time frame. They ask that it be delayed a year in order, because they're in the middle of adoption, the adoption cycle. Right now, they maybe the English adoption cycle comes up, and then it comes up in another 7 years. And so in order for this to really work smoothly for them, they ask that it be delayed. But there was some interest in amending it on the House side that it's here.
They agreed that it did work to do that, and I believe that's the responsible thing to do, to move the bill and have them work with the House committee to change the date which it first applies. So I would entertain a motion to move the bill.
Just one question, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Is that amendment that they would do in the House something that you would support as the sponsor of the bill?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think it's appropriate that they not get a mandate that really interferes with the normal operation of their textbook adoption, and so I fully agree with that suggestion. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 694 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hartung has moved Senate Bill 694 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And we will...
Would you like to carry that?
I will carry that. And we will stand at ease a moment until Representative Crummell...
He's here.
He's here?
There he is.
There he is.
Oh!
He's been here the whole meeting.
Yeah.
There.
No. He's just been...
He was here at 2:30.
You don't blend that easily into the woodwork here, Representative. I'm sorry I didn't see you come in. We're going to open a public hearing on HJM 9 and ask Steve Johnson to go ahead and come up too.
Susanna Ramirez.
Go ahead, Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the Senate Education Committee, for the record, my name is Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 27. I'm here today to ask you to support HJM 9. Before the 1999 legislative session, I became aware of the fact that although Congress had passed the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, they had only partially funded it. The IDEA was first started in 1975, and it was reauthorized in 1997, and it, in essence, has become what we would call as an unfunded mandate. During the last session and through the interim, I've continuously talked with our congressional delegation about IDEA funding and seeking an increase. And what the Congress originally had said was that they would fund up to 40% of the cost for children with special needs. HJM 9 will formally ask our delegation and Congress in general to please fund IDEA at the promised level of 40%. Information is being distributed about the current bill in Congress. By sending this memorial, I think we can send a very strong message to Congress that we expect them to keep their promise, basically. This is extremely important. If the legislation that's been proposed in Congress were to pass by 2007, Congress would be putting approximately $20 billion into IDEA funding, which would bring all states' level up to a much more acceptable level. Right now, it's estimated in Oregon that it's approximately 8% of the funding is for what would be considered IDEA funding is provided by the federal government. And so you can see if we can get it to 40%, that's a pretty big hole that could be filled. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions, and I appreciate your support on the bill.
We've heard
a lot of testimony before this committee about the needs of IDEA recipients and the shortage of funds to meet the needs in that area, and I appreciate you bringing this to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, my name is Susana Ramirez, and I am here on behalf of the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Council. The council is a federally funded council, and it has a mandate for policy analysis and systems change. And we strongly support House Joint Memorial 9 and the effort to seek additional federal funds to fund these services and special education. As a parent of two children who received special education and as an advocate, I am very well aware of the increasing cost of special education. And we see that school districts have a struggle in funding these services, and families also face a tremendous challenge in securing services for their children who need special education. Access to education for students with disabilities is fundamentally a civil rights issue. The federal mandate came about because of the long-standing discrimination and lack of access to education of students with disabilities. And so we definitely support this and will continue to seek these funds. However, we want to remind the community and this committee that these children do not belong to the federal government. They are Oregonians who attend our schools and live in our neighborhoods. And at this time of increasing budget constraints, we would like to really come together as a community to find a solution to serve the needs of these students while we increase that funding. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Good afternoon, Senator Starr, members of the committee. My name is Steve Johnson. I'm the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Special Education, Oregon Department of Education. Representative Crummell and Mrs. Ramirez have stated very clearly the concerns that the department would also bring to this joint memorial. We urge your support of it. You are being provided with our written testimony, as well as some graphics that demonstrate the lack of funding of IDEA over the last 25 years. If Congress had lived up to its promise to our students with disabilities, Oregon would have received over the last 25 years $1.4 billion additional to what we have currently received. $1.4 billion would have come in to support the education of children with disabilities. Oregon's teachers, Oregon's parents, you, the legislature, have worked very hard to make up the difference that that $1.4 billion would have contributed to. We've tried to live up to that promise. It's been hard without that money. We urge your support of our members in the Congress to support full funding of IDEA and to allow us all to live up to the promise to our children with disabilities. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon to the panel and to Mr. Johnson. In the department's analysis of the proposals in the Bush administration educational agenda, how do you see Oregon benefiting with regard to this issue and getting more funding to the state?
Senator Starr, Senator Gordley. I think it's important, in response to your question, I think it's very important that we recognize that this memorial is going to Congress. Congress has stepped forward and has, this year, between both the Senate and the House, they have proposed $2.9 billion to support, just in 1 year, the increased funding for IDEA. The Bush administration has proposed a funding of IDEA of $1 billion. So Congress has charted a clear path to full funding. by 2007. We have no sense yet of the administration's commitment to full funding at any time in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Not. Thank you very much. Appreciate the testimony. We're going to close the public hearing and open the work session on HJM 9.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Castile.
I move that we adopt HJM 9 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Castile has moved that we adopt HJM 9, send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one thought, because on joint memorials in general, although I haven't voted against them, I've generally thought, because I think they go to Congress and they don't accomplish what I hope they would accomplish. This one, I actually enthusiastically support, and I hope. And I should say I will call my representative and ask him to read this one, because I think this one actually is one that they could really, if they just read it and act, it would really help us more than probably any of the others. So I thank the sponsors for bringing this one. I think this is actually exactly what joint memorials should do, is we should do this one every session.
Appreciate that. Any further comments? You've heard the motion. Any opposition? Hearing none, so ordered. Committee, we have set a record.
Indeed.
Yeah, that was great.
See if we can break it next time.
We've got a lot of work ahead of us, and I appreciate the diligence of this committee. You hang in there and do good work. Appreciate it. With that, we're going to close the committee on education.